Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, October 10th, 2015. 10-10-15. This is episode 1227. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Corning Optical Cables. Corning's incredibly durable Thunderbolt and USB 3-dot optical cables are longer, thinner, lighter, and stronger. Go to corning.com/twit and use the promo code TWIT to save up to $50 on USB 3-dot optical cables. And by PillPack, a full-service pharmacy that combines personalized service, convenient packaging, and modern technology to make your life easier. Visit pillpack.com/twit to save $20 on vitamins and OTCs when you transfer your prescriptions. And by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give a new life to a used device. Visit gazelle.com today. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, suggestion, if you'd like a, we used to say this, little hand-holding on the information superhighway. Remember the information super, oh yeah, that, a.k.a. the internet. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. You can Skype us. And since it's a toll free number, shouldn't cost you anything on the Skype. Yeah, let's see. Saw the Steve Jobs movie Thursday. It's a good, it's not that it's a bad movie. Aaron Sorkin's an amazing writer, Danny Boyle's an amazing director. Michael Fassbender, people are saying Academy Award consideration. Kate Winslet, once she figured out what accent she was going to use, great, really great performance all around. There was only 8 characters in it. And that's part of the I guess the thing I would say to you is don't go seeing it expecting to see a biographical movie. It's not. I wish they'd just call it Steve Jiminy or something, and it would have been a great movie, but it's you know, coming on the heels of the fourth anniversary of his death, it's, you know, you watch it and you think, wow, that's basically all made up. it was basically all made up. I think what Aaron Sorkin has said, and I think this is probably true, is he wasn't trying to be factual. He was trying to tell an artistic story. He says, I'm not a photographer, I'm a painter. Fine. And, of course, he has a little axe to grind. but the sad thing is it has somebody, a real person's name attached to it. And I and many others knew many of the people involved. And those of us who were there kind of scratching our heads. In fact, I feel bad. Steve's a widow who is completely, he and his wife and his children aren't mentioned at all, even though the movie takes place the third part of the movie takes place 7 or 8 years after he got married, after the kids were born. No mention of them at all. And so she's, I think, understandably a little perturbed. She tried to get him not to make the movie. She tried very hard to stop the movie. There's some, you know, the misinformation is, they said, based on the biography of Steve Jobs written by Walter Isaacson. Steve's inner circle didn't even like that biography. I thought the biography was fine. I've read all the, you know, the books about Steve Jobs. And as I said, I've been there, watched it all happen. But it isn't based on that biography. It's based on, I think, what it's really, it's a great work of art. It's Aaron Sorkin setting up a character who goes through, who is just the worst person you've ever met. In the first half hour, you just think, who is this guy and why is he so horrific? And why is anybody still there working for him? Which is not, you know, Steve was tough, but that's a very one-dimensional portrayal of one of the greatest inventors of our time and greatest creators. And it's an unfortunate characterization. And then he, you know, through the movie, he redeems himself a little bit. He becomes a better person thanks to things that never actually happened. But, you know, that's it's a great work of fiction. Now, you want to see a good movie. If you go see Steve Jobs, is a good movie. It's a good movie. Jobs is a good movie. But it's not anything to do with real life. So just try to get that. Same thing with The Social Network. It's even less accurate than The Social Network, which was in itself completely, you know, inaccurate. But if you want to see a great movie that some people actually think is a true story, which cracks me up, The Martian. It's not a true story, but it's a great movie. My thought would be, you can make art. People are going to be sensitive if you make art about people they know who were with us only recently. You know, I imagine that, I'm thinking, you know, Patton. Probably General Patton's friends didn't really much like that movie. I don't know. I mean, maybe they thought, that's great. That's just George to a T. I'm sure any movie about somebody real, you people who were there watch it, go, interesting. Not how I remember it. You may want to see it. I want to caution people who are interested in Steve Jobs' life not to take this as any indication of how it really was. And if you want to know more, check your local library, kids. There's a great book called Becoming Steve Jobs by a couple of reporters who covered him from day one. Becoming Steve Jobs is great. I think even the Walter Isaacson book is great, although it's interesting how Mr. Jobs' inner circle, people like Johnny Ive and Tim Cook, who still run Apple, are also very dismissive of that. They say, that's not accurate. That's funny because that's the book that's the interviewer, Walter Isaacson, who got so many hours with Mr. Jobs and got so much insight and stuff from Jobs directly. I'm not going to spoil The Martian. Birdman says, don't spoil it. Look, it didn't happen, okay? If that's a spoiler, then I'm out of... no one has yet been to Mars, so it couldn't have happened yet. But it could happen in the future. Let's hope it doesn't. Great, great, great movie. 8888. I felt I needed to say that because I don't want people to go and see the Jobs movie and think, wow, what a jerk that guy was. Because it's not fair to him, you know, a real person... to be, you know, that's just a portrayal. An excellent piece of art. Not such a great piece of biography. And I don't think they were trying to do that. Here's some good news. An Australian Supreme Court, has ruled unanimously that you cannot patent a gene. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. A United States company, Myriad Genetics, had patented a gene in the human genome that's linked to an increased risk for breast cancer, the BRCA1 gene, BRCA1 gene. The court said you can't patent genes, which seems like a good thing. The court's ruling said it, although the gene isolation was a product of human action, it already existed, and you can't claim an invention of something in our DNA. Hallelujah. According to Ars Technica and Glenn Moody writing, this might mean the end of globally of the idea that you could patent a gene. Oh, would that be good? Hey, Microsoft had a big event, a lot of attention, and deservedly so, on its big event. When was that? It seems like so long ago. Was that Monday? Seems like so long ago. What an amazing thing. They announced two new phones. Okay, big deal, because Windows Phone, who cares? They said HoloLens, which is their augmented reality glasses, which I'm very excited about. That developer edition, $3,000, won't be available to Q1. So, you know, it's not anything to get excited about yet, although it could be. They updated the Microsoft Band, which actually is a pretty good fitness band. But the thing, they surprised everybody with, and the Surface Pro 4, that we all knew that would happen. It's very similar to Surface Pro 3, only better. But then they amazingly announced the first laptop. Microsoft, did you know Microsoft has never made a laptop? Did you know that? Feels like they might have, but no. They make the operating systems, and other companies make the laptops. They make Windows. Other companies make Windows laptops. But Microsoft, I think, finally got fed up and said, you know what? We're going to do one. We're going to do it right. It's not cheap. Starts $1,500, I think. But it is really interesting. Really interesting. I'll tell you what. I ordered one just so I could talk about it. It won't be out till the 26th, so we've got a couple more weeks. But I will give you a review when I do get it. It looks looks like Microsoft said, if money were no object, short of making it out of solid gold, what would be a great Windows 10 laptop? And they call it the Surface Book, and it's impressive as heck. Comes with a stylus, comes with this very ingenious, it looks like a laptop, but the screen can be detached through this really interesting electronic mechanism. All in all, beautiful 3,000 by 2,000 screen. All in all, very interesting. We'll talk more about that when it comes out. Your call's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Get it on. 88-88, ask Leo the phone number. You know who's going to answer the phone? It's Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, in the cutest little peasant dress. That's beautiful.
Frock.
Okay. It is a frock. Men don't know what a frock is. I don't know what a frock is, but if that's a frock, I believe you. You tell me it's a frock, I'm going to say okay. So welcome. Good to see you. You have already been taking the calls, I see.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a 8888 Ask Leo? Did I mention that? Call that number. We have a couple of lines open. Not that I want you to work any harder. You're working very hard.
But someone please mop my brow.
wonderful people, who should I start with? I'll talk to them all. But
Yeah. Might be my favorite question ever.
What?
Joanna wants you to define a term we hear all the time her.
Oh, good. Let me fire up Wikipedia. Hi, Joanna. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call, and you have to save my job.
Oh, my. I better answer this right.
Here's the deal. I've always been good at getting different jobs, even if I don't have any prior experience.
Good.
Right now, I'm over 50. I've just been recently hired by a Fortune 500 company, and they're flying me out.
Oh, to the congratulations.
Everything.
Now,
however,
I'm going to tell you what I think it was. I want to say Sheryl Sandberg in her book, Lean In. She said, you know, men, when they're about to get a job and they'll ask them, well, can you do this? They'll say, oh, yeah, I can do that. Whether they can, they say, yeah, I can do that. And then they run home and they learn it. And women are honest, according to Cheryl. And they go, well, I don't know, but I'll learn it. And who's going to get the job? I can do that. So good for you. You said, I could do that. Now, let's help you. Let's help you do it.
Okay, but I thought I could until I listened to you.
Oh, no.
It's great.
I hope I didn't confuse you.
But because you're so brilliant, I'm thinking, I don't know what the heck he's talking about. So that's just like asking a fifth grader, can you read? Unless you mean on the Harvard University level.
Well, what is it that's puzzling you? I'll try to explain it better. You know what? If you didn't get it, then it wasn't that I'm so brilliant. It was that I did not do a good job explaining it.
No, they said that I had to have really good computer skills.
Okay.
Now, I know how to type on the... I didn't even know there was a...
Windows 10 word processor? Windows 10?
I don't know how to type, but
How much time do you have before this meeting?
Well, they're flying me out next week.
Okay. It's okay. It's going to be okay. So it sounds like you don't have a lot of experience with computers.
I mean, I can type and I can learn.
Of course you can.
YouTube.
You said the right thing. You said, I'll do it. I can do that. Now, do you have any idea what that means? Because it could be anything from taking it apart and fixing it to setting up an Excel spreadsheet to merely doing some word processing. So, because computers, that's a big term. Do you know what job is it?
Well, I'm kind of an idea person.
Okay.
Looks like they're going to listen to some of my ideas.
Excellent. So they want to know just that you're comfortable with computers, that you can get your email and read it, you can respond to it.
Oh, okay.
They're probably not asking you, can you build an Excel spreadsheet? Can you build a model in Excel? Because and then that's a hard thing to do, but it's totally learnable. I don't know if you could learn it in a week, but it's totally learnable. And it's certainly they're not asking you to fix computers, because that, I would say, you got a way to go. So, good. If it's just, have you done email before?
Of course. Oh, no, that I know how to do that.
Okay.
I'm just thinking, when I listen to you and you talk to the really computer literate people, I'm thinking, oh, my.
Oh, no, no, no. Because you're listening to a geek, okay? So a geek, a.k.a. moi, it has a different relationship with a computer than a normal person.
Oh, okay.
All right. Geek wants to understand how stuff works, wants to understand how to modify it to his or her own, you know, particular needs, and just loves the idea of kind of understanding what's under the hood, right? You don't need to know how an engine works to drive a car.
Okay. That's it. Perfect. I just need to know how to drive.
You just need to know how to drive. And I'm going to guess that what you need to know is how to send and receive email. Did they tell you what kind? It'll probably be a Windows computer. Have you used Windows computers?
Yes, I have a Windows.
Okay. What version of Windows do you have?
I think it's Vista.
Okay. So the first thing I want you, Vista is going to be pretty close to Windows 7, which is very likely what they're going to have you use. So you know where to go to the menu bar, you know, right, to click the start menu, and you can run a program.
Right. I do have Windows 7. It does say Windows.
Oh, good. Windows 7. That's probably what you're going to use. Okay. If they have Windows 10, if for some reason, and most businesses don't, but if they for some reason are very, you know, anxious to learn new stuff, you just say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm holding off on the upgrade. Here, I'll give you a phrase. I'm holding off on the upgrade till next month's Threshold 2 release. Okay? And they'll go, oh, you're a smart woman. That's exactly right. You know, I understand. So say, I'm just not familiar with Windows 10 yet. I'm holding off till the Threshold 2 upgrade. And they'll go, whoa. And then they're going to be intimidated by you. They're going to say, well, we can't talk to her anymore about this stuff. Or just say, okay. But they won't. They'll have Windows 7, and you've used Windows 7. I would spend as much time as you can in Windows 7 learning how to surf the net, how to send and receive email. Do you have a copy of Microsoft Office?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So you might want to spend a little time working in Microsoft Word, the word processor, because likely if you're doing brainstorming, you might be doing some word processing. You might need to learn PowerPoint. PowerPoint is a presentation software. A lot of businesses use PowerPoint. They might say, all right, Ms. Joanna, we need you to give us a presentation tomorrow on the 10 reasons why we should adopt this new widget format. And you need to be able to do that presentation in PowerPoint. So maybe the best thing for you to focus on the next few days is PowerPoint. You can go to Lynda, LYNDA.com. This is a good thing. It's not free, but it's not expensive. They have great training in a variety of different software programs, including PowerPoint and Excel and Windows and all that. And those are really good courses, much better than the YouTube courses. Disclaimer, they're a sponsor, but I would be making this recommendation anyway. In fact, you might even be honest with the company. Say, you know, it's been a while since I've used PowerPoint. You don't have a subscription to Lynda.com, do you? A lot of companies do. Or if you want to keep it a secret, just do it on your own. But LYNDA, Lynda.com.
Perfect.
I think the course is there. I think you can get a 2-week trial, actually, so you could just try it without paying for it. You're going to do fine.
Because, I mean, this is how I've always landed my job. I like the excitement.
Good for you.
Myself, so I just like, so this is great.
You're going to be great. Dig in.
Feel great.
Lean in, as Sheryl Sandberg would say.
Thank you so much.
The job is yours, Joanna. Now just show them how great and smart you are. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Here he is, Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru. Hello, Scott Wilkinson.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Now, did you see The Martian? By the way, everybody should see The Martian. Did you see it in HDR, 3D, 4K, 500 millibars of special?
Actually, I did see it in HDR, high dynamic range.
I bet it looked good.
And the projector and the movie itself was in 4K spatial resolution. It was not shown in 3D, however, in that theater. It's being shown in 3D many other places, but AMC, which is the parent company of where all the Dolby Cinema locations are that have high dynamic range, and there are currently 8 around the country and 2 in the Netherlands, they have decided not to show movies in that theater in 3D, even though they're perfectly capable of doing it. And I went to an event last week and I asked them why not. And they said, well, we offer 3D in other theaters, the IMAX, for example, or other regular standard dynamic range theaters that have real D 3D. We decided to offer consumers a choice. And I said, okay, fine. And I suspect, I don't have any backup for this, but I suspect it also has to do with the fact that the Dolby 3D glasses that they would have to use in that cinema, they would need to have facilities to sterilize them and reuse them. And they probably don't. Plus, they've got a contract with Real D, and they wouldn't want to undercut that business. That's my speculation, total speculation.
Mm.
But in any event, I don't think you need to see it in 3D if you see it in high dynamic range.
I saw it in 2D and it was fine. But
it was fine. Sure.
Did Mars look real?
It looked real to me.
Okay.
Well, with one exception. Interesting. I went and looked for some still photos to post with my piece about it, and there were some shots of Matt Damon, Mark Watney, sitting on Mars in his spacesuit.
I know, with his sneakers on. Yeah, his Mars dirty sneakers.
Is Mars dirty sneakers and some shrubs.
Whoops. Whoops.
I went,
shrubs? Whoops.
Continuity. Can we get some people over?
I don't think there are any shrubs in the movie, thank goodness.
No, there aren't. I not that I remember seeing.
There are potatoes, but no shrubs.
I totally agree with you that it was a wonderful movie. It was a wonderful book.
Yeah.
And
rarely can you say the book and the movie were equally good. And this is a case where you will not lose anything by seeing the movie.
Right.
But both of them are worth seeing. They're so good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Just very, the only thing you'll know, you'll get is that you'll know what happens. But so there's a spoiler one way or the other. I don't think it matters even. I used to say you always read the book first, but boy, they're so good.
Yeah.
Hey, I have a question for you if you'd like.
Yeah,
This one comes from Rich. Is that? No, I'm sorry. Ron in Charlotte, North Carolina. He wants to know about calibrating a 4K TV. Hi, Ron, Leo Laporte, and Scott Wilkinson.
Hey, guys. How are y'all doing today?
We're great. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hey, thanks.
The question I got is, I had a old 47-inch Vizio, just 1080p, and it died last week. So I ran to the big box store, and I bought a Samsung 55 4K Ultra HD. I mean, it's their $900 model if you look on their website. And I got it home, and it's got all the settings. But, Scott and Leo, do y'all recommend any kind of, calibration or anything special, just to fine-tune it?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've certainly talked about calibrating normal TVs, but is anything special about a 4K?
In this particular case, no. There's nothing really special about it except that it has more pixels. So it can be calibrated in the same way as a normal TV. What I recommend, for a $900 TV, the question becomes, is it worth hiring a calibrator to do a full-on calibration?
For half the price of the television.
For half the price, $200 or $300 at least.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah.
Or more.
Yeah.
So in that case, I would probably say no. So what I would recommend doing, sorry to all my calibrator friends, but, what I recommend doing is going into the menu. There's a parameter called picture mode. And ideally what you would want to do is select the setting of that picture mode parameter that's called movie or cinema. If you do that, you're already very far along the path towards an accurate picture on the TV. In other words, a picture on the TV that reflects accurately what the content creator saw when they actually put the movie together in their mastering suite. So go in there, select movie or cinema mode. I forget what Samsung calls it these days. It's probably either movie or cinema.
Yeah, it had movie, and I think it had like natural or something like that, plus the other vivid,
the
real bright and all that. So
yeah, go pick movie mode. That'll get you good way towards what you really want, which is an accurate picture.
Okay, and then the other thing was, you know, I guess it being 120 hertz, you don't have to worry about the soap opera effect for that kind of TV.
Actually, you do need to worry about it in the sense of, do you like it or not? If you enable frame interpolation, which in the Samsung is called Auto Motion Plus, if you enable it, then movies will look like they were shot on video. It'll look kind of soap opera-y. It'll look kind of plasticky. And a lot of people really hate that, so they turn it off. So that's up to you. Totally a taste thing. If you like the way it looks, it sharpens up motion. So it's great. It's good for sports. But if you don't like the way it looks on movies, turn it off. If you don't mind it, keep it on. It'll be on by default.
Okay. Okay.
Do you think at some point, so your TV is fine, but at some point we're going to get HDR,
yep,
4K TVs. Will we have to do something different to calibrate them?
Yes. And in fact, I pre-recorded my podcast, Home Theater Geeks, yesterday to be broadcast or aired next week on Thursday at its normal time. And that's exactly what we talked about. I had Dave Abrams on. He's a calibrator. And we were talking about calibrating these new TVs with high dynamic range. That's where things get different. With current TVs that don't have high dynamic range, you can use the same color space, you can use the same dynamic range, everything's the same as it was. But with high dynamic range, you have deeper blacks, you have brighter whites, you have more colors, a wider what's called color gamut or range of colors. And that requires new tools to really do a full calibration. And when you're spending thousands of dollars on a TV, which you will with an HDR, high dynamic range TV, these early ones are the top of the line TVs, so they're going to be expensive. And then it becomes worthwhile to spend a few hundred bucks on a calibrator to come in and use very expensive equipment and lots of knowledge and training, expensive training at that, to actually bring your TV up to its absolute maximum potential. And you need new tools, as I said. You need new software. Spectracal is a company that makes one of the major software packages the calibrators use. It's called CalMan. And they've just released a version which has the ability to calibrate Dolby Vision TVs. So Dolby Vision is one of the two main types of high dynamic range. And so their software can now do it. And they now sell a meter, colorimeter, that can measure higher brightnesses, which are endemic of high dynamic range.
I can't wait to get one of those. But as you have counseled me, the time is not yet right. Wait.
Not quite. For most people, yes. Early adopters, no. Go for it. But for most of us, it's
maybe
really better to wait.
You'll give us a heads up, right?
We'll see tons at CES. Tons.
Watch Home Theater Geeks at twit.tv/HTG. And as you mentioned, coming up Thursday, your interview talking about calibrating HDR 4K TVs. That's Scott Wilkinson. Thanks for joining us, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Here we go. Scott Wilkinson, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you so much. It is important. C. Dublin 1988 is asking a great question. Aren't television stations still broadcasting in 1080i or 720p? The answer is yes, they are. Where 4K really comes into play, so to speak, is in streaming and on Ultra HD Blu-ray, which we don't have yet, but we will. Panasonic and Samsung have announced players. The studios have announced they're going to release product. I think it's going to be next year before we actually see it. They said at the beginning of this year that it was going to be the end of this year, but I think it's going to be beginning of next year. In any event, yes, though, if you're watching broadcast TV or cable or satellite, for the most part, that's going to be 1080p or 1080i or 720p. And the TV is going to upscale it. It's going to add pixels and fill its native pixel resolution, which is fine if the scaler works well. And most of these TVs, they do. But you're right. It's not 4K and high dynamic range is not for broadcast yet. There is a broadcast standard called ATSC 3.0, but I don't expect that to be rolled out for probably at least a couple of years. I may be wrong. I'm only speculating here, but I don't think it's going to be right away. It's going to be a while. In Japan, it's a different story. They're already starting to experiment broadcasting 8K, and they claim they're going to broadcast something in 2020, the World Cup, I think, in 8K in Japan. But I don't worry about that too much. I think 4K or Ultra HD is what we are going to have for a while as a primary type of system. Percolate, any thoughts on the new Sonos Play 5 soon to be released? I haven't seen it or tried it yet. I imagine I will at Cedia. I'm going to the Cedia show next week. Custom Electronics Design and Installation Association. In fact, I will be calling in from Dallas, Texas to this show at this time next week from Cedia. So I don't know yet about the Sonos Play 5. I hope to. I'm intending to get a whole Sonos system in my house in order to review it. And when I do, I'll probably get that new Play 5. Let's see, Beatmaster. I hope Samsung and Panasonic don't do exclusive UHD titles as they did before with Avatar. Oh, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that. For a while there, Avatar was only available as a perk if you bought a Panasonic or a Samsung 3D TV. And now I wonder if they'll do the same thing with really high dynamic range is the key there. Most of these TVs, Samsung TVs, certain high-end models already have high dynamic range capability. Panasonic, LG, Sony will get firmware updates on some of their TVs to do high dynamic range. But the interesting thing is that those TVs all implement the SMPTE standard of high dynamic range, sometimes colloquially referred to as HDR10. Whereas Vizio just introduced the reference series, we're going to see that at Cedia next week as well, which implements Dolby Vision high dynamic range. And herein lies what I think is going to be a potential trouble in the industry, which is the battle between these two types of HDR. The Vizio can't do HDR10. The Samsungs and the others can't do Vizio, Dolby Vision. So what happens when one of them gets the other kind of signal? We don't know yet.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I didn't mention I would highly recommend if you are a fan of Scott Wilkinson that you listen to this week's Home Theater Geeks. He interviews a fellow, Ricky Farr, who is amazing, entrepreneur, music producer, produced the Isle of Wight festivals. And I haven't heard it yet. I'm going to listen to it right after the show because everybody's telling me it's one of the best interviews they've ever heard. If you're into music, from everything from Jimi Hendrix to The Who to The Beatles, you got to listen to Home Theater Geeks. You'll find it at twit.tv/HTG. 8888 Ask Leo the number. Back to the phones we go. And Carlos is next in Brea. Hi, Carlos.
Hey, Leo. I have a quick question here. I went from Apple 6 Plus to Samsung Note 5. And I was really, really fond of selected text to speech with Apple's very simple. Yeah. You just highlight it, and Siri talks and tells you exactly what you're reading. Now with Samsung, on the Note, I can select it, but I just can't get it to speak back to me or read it to me.
Yeah, that's a nice feature. How do we do that on Android? So he's moved from iOS to Android, and he wants a way to read a selected bit of text. You can have it read a text file. But
The text, it'll read it. I can speak the text in there, and it'll send a text for me.
But I like that you're right, that selecting a paragraph and then saying read that is a nice feature. I think that might be something Android does not do, but I'm racking my brain. Now, as you know, I use Android and iOS equally. Lately, because of the new iPhone, I've been using that a lot. I do have a Note 5, and I love my Note 5. But off the top of my head, I can't think of a way to do it. You know, one thing that's really nice on the new iOS, I hate to say this to you, but on the new iPhones, you can select text. Of course, they have the old-fashioned way with the magnifying glass, But now with 3D touch, you press hard on the keyboard, and suddenly you have a cursor that you can move around. And if I'm sorry I mentioned it. I'm sorry. That's terrible.
Actually, the thing is that I went from a 6 Plus and I happened to this issue.
The Note is amazing. The Note 5 is a great phone. It's a better screen than any phone, including the new iPhones. You have a stylus, which is and the things you can do with the stylus, including selecting text, are great. You can, in a very easy way on the Note 5, select text with a stylus. But reading it out loud, anybody in the chat room have any thoughts on this? Because I, off the top of my head, I don't know if there's a way to do that. And, you know, it's funny because they have an excellent text-to-speech engine on Android. Google's text-to-speech engine is very good. You can download different voices. You can even download high-quality voices.
Right, and it came with a download, with an app, which is a Google text-to-speech.
Right. But it only reads files. Yeah.
Right. It won't give you the selected.
I'm trying to think, and nothing happens. But, you know, it's funny. I mean, there may well be, like, you could say, okay, Google, read this to me. And it would. I don't know. I'll keep looking. You might look in the accessibility settings. That's kind of where it is on iOS, right, and TalkBack.
I've been in and out. I've looked and searched for YouTube videos. I've searched online, and I was just like,
okay, I don't know. I don't think it's very possible. There's no way. But you know what? We have a great audience, smart people listening in the chat room. And also, of course, you can go to techguylabs.com and add your comment there. So check that in a couple of days, see if anybody said anything. And keep listening. Maybe we'll come up with an answer. I don't know of a way to do that. And it is a great feature. You can have Google read you a text message, Guy Smiley says. That's right. But what he wants to do, he's reading text on the page, maybe in a browser. He wants to select it and have it read it out loud. You use TalkBack on iOS to do that, which is part of the accessibility settings. I don't know how to do it on the Android. I'll have to look and play with it. Jay in San Francisco, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jay.
Hey, Leo. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, sir.
Question for you. Need a little help deciding on what type of camera to purchase.
Ooh, I love spending people's money. So what is it? Tell me what you're looking for.
So I basically want to kind of take a little more home videos, just day-to-day kind of life, maybe doing some vlogs online, but mostly for the family just to keep those memories. And originally I was looking at the Canon. I believe it's the 770D or D70.
Yeah, very nice camera.
So that was my original thought, but then DJI just came out with the Osmo, and it kind of is intriguing.
Yeah, but it's not. It's kind of a gimmick camera more than it is. So that's why I always ask you, what is it that you want to do? Are you going to be traveling with this camera?
Possibly. I mean, mostly just kind of whatever happens in my life. You know, day to day, possibly pictures as well. So that's why I was leaning more towards the Canon.
The neat thing about the Osmo, see, DJI makes the drones. They make the Phantoms, and they've learned in the making of the Phantoms a technology that is very useful, as it turns out, in shooting video, which is kind of image stabilization. So they have a stick which you put your phone in. You put your phone in for the viewfinder, I guess, and then there's a little camera on it, and it's basically what we call a gimbal, and it will automatically stabilize the camera. So if what you do a lot of is shoot videos as you're running down the beach or riding your bicycle or, jiggling, in other words, this will be great. But the optical image stabilization inside, for instance, the iPhone 6S Plus does pretty much the same thing, almost as effectively. And it comes in, you don't need the phone, you don't need an extra thing. But if you're running after people shooting video, this is an awesome thing. I just don't know if it's your next camera. The Canon doesn't do this, but the Canon is a great still camera that also shoots super high quality video. The video will be better quality than with this camera, I can assure you. It's 4K, but who needs 4K? We can't play it back anyway. What kind of phone do you have?
Right now I have the Samsung Note 4, which I love.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think it has I don't know if it has optical image stabilization in it. Certainly the newer phones do, and that's going to give you some of the benefit of this gimbal system.
Okay.
So, but you say, so some stills, but not a lot.
Yeah, I think I would go kind of back and forth, and again, that's why I was leaning towards the Canon.
Think of the Osmo as a GoPro with stabilization built into it. That's the quality.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's not super great quality. It's great for action. It's great if you spend a lot of time running around taking video. But a good phone with optical image stabilization is going to do pretty much the same job, and I don't think you're going to need it. I would say, you're shooting some stills, but predominantly video?
Yeah, I would say predominantly video is what I'm looking for.
Any good camera. I would even look at this, something like the Sony RX100. Look for a still camera with built-in optical image stabilization. I get it for you. The Olympus OMD EM5. I think they have an excellent five-axis stabilization system that does wonders for stills and for video. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, our show today brought to you by, I'm thrilled to have these guys as a sponsor, Corning. You know Corning, of course, from Gorilla Glass. These guys are the glass experts. They also make fiber optic cables, and these are amazing. If you have a device, a hardware that supports USB 3 or Thunderbolt, you're going to want to look at these cables. These are the USB 3-dot optical cables and the Thunderbolt optical cables. Why? Well, for a lot of reasons. Now, I know some of you have already used fiber optic cables, and you say, oh, no, they're fragile. No, Corning's made these not only incredible speed demons, but incredibly reliable. You wouldn't do this, would you, with a fiber optic cable? I've got it all bundled, all twisted. These cables are incredibly robust. Let me do a little demo for you. I'm not very good at doing these, but I have all the tools. So let me see if I can do this. First of all, we're going to take a laser, because you know the way fiber optics works is kind of cool. It basically uses pulses of light to transmit down these are thin threads of glass. But these new Corning is brilliant with glass. These new Corning fibers are so robust, you can do things you would never have done with fiber optic cables. And by the way, fast. And long runs, too. 200 feet for Thunderbolt, 165 feet for USB 3. And the speeds, up to 20 gigabits a second on Thunderbolt, 5 gigabits a second on USB 3. But let me again show you the robust. So I'm going to turn this laser on. You see, it should probably turn off the light. Well, you could see that. It's blinking, right? So that means it's transmitting down this wire. In fact, the first thing I can do is I can just tie this in a knot, and it's still... But watch this. It takes a bending, and it keeps on sending. I am going to crimp this cable. They gave me this plastic block. I love this. Of course, I've done it wrong, but I'll do it. You know what? You can't do it wrong. I'm going to jam these cables, crimp them like you would never do with optical cables, right? You'd be crazy to do this with fiber optics. Jam them in that... So now I've got them. These cables are taking a big stress test. What do you think? Is this going to still be transmitting? Look at that. Absolutely. I'm going to shine it just right into the camera. There you go. It is still transmitting, even though I've tied a knot and I've crimped it. These are robust and fast, long throws. They're just the best cables you've ever used. Now, if you're a pro and you're working in an environment where you need the best, can I recommend these fabulous Corning optical cables? They have transformed the traditional USB and Thunderbolt cables from plain old copper. You know what they're doing? These connectors actually are electrically active. They take the copper signal and they turn them into light. Amazing. Declutter, move peripherals into another room, improve productivity, increase security. They're longer, thinner, lighter, and stronger. 50% thinner, 80% lighter than traditional copper cables. And you don't have to worry anymore about how you treat them. Take advantage of our special deal for Twit viewers from Corning. You'll get $30 off the 30-meter $50 off the 50 meter USB 3.0 optical cables. No limit. You could buy as many as you want. You can rewire your entire office. Corning.com/twit. $30 off the 30 meter, $50 off the 50 meter on the USB 3.0 optical cables when you use the offer code TWIT at checkout. Corning.com/twit. We thank them so much for the support of the Tech Guy podcast. Corning, you rock. Chat room thank reminded you. Me. They said, don't forget about Scott. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, thank you so much.
You still
much.
Have 292 seconds.
292 seconds.
Yeah.
I'll talk fast. Web1185 was asking me about indoor over-the-air antennas. And the brands that I know, and maybe others in the chat room will know others, Mike Heiss in particular might know something here. The brands that I know well are WineGuard and Mohu, M-O-H-U, both of which have worked well for me. Let's see if I can find any others here. Consumer Reports reviewed antennas. And what did they see here? Oh, Antennas Direct, Mohu, RCA makes them. Turk also, T-E-R-K, that's another good one. WineGuard, certainly. You might need to get an amplified antenna, depending on where it is with respect to where the broadcast tower is. And, you know, if you're facing it, then you probably don't need an amplified antenna. If you're not, you might. Depends on a lot of factors. AntennaWeb.org is another great place to go to look up stuff about over-the-air antennas. Thank you, Loquacious. I really appreciate that. Rev Dan Onimity. Sometimes I can't read these screen names. Indoor OTA antennas suck pretty much unless you can get them to a window. Yes, they need to be near windows. You are 100% correct on that. They do need to be near windows, and ideally a window that's facing the broadcast tower. So here in L.A., that's Mount Wilson, which is to the east. So I have a rooftop antenna, actually, on a rotor, and I point it at Mount Wilson, so I get the best signal. And Mike Heiss saying, Turk Silver Sensor, Mohu Sky Antenna Direct, Mohu Sky Antenna Direct, USE and amplifier, USB and amplifier, I guess. Yes, Loquacious, I couldn't agree more. Mike Heiss is a great addition to my shows. I love having him in the chat room. He's a font of knowledge. So thank you very much. Yeah, Rev Dan, me too, outdoor on a motor. Exactly so. Emily the Strange, maybe a show on fundamentals, how things work. Color theory, acoustics, etc. You know, I have thought about that. And it's something I would like to do and probably will at some point. Web2727, thank you so much mentioning the podcast on Thursday with Ricky Farr. Man, that was amazing. It was a pretty easy show for me, actually, because all I had to do was kind of wind him up and let him go. And, man, he's got so many great stories. I did try to interject once in a while, but basically I just let him run because he was so good. It was so amazing. That's a good question, Dexter. Will there be a problem using a splitter with an OTA digital antenna with multiple device inputs? You know, that's a great question. I don't know the answer to that. I don't think it's like a speaker situation where if you do a splitter, you change the impedance. I don't know. That's a great question. I'll have to look into that. So anyway, yeah. Somebody in the chat room, I was saying earlier, we were talking about 4K streaming, and I only have 60 seconds to do it, so I won't say much, but I will say that the Amazon Fire TV has 4K streaming, but apparently not an HDMI 2.0 output. It's 1.4, which means it can't do any more than 4K 30 at 8 bits, 4K 30 frames per second. The TiVo Bolt can do it. It has a 2.0 output, so it can do 4K 60 at 8 bits, probably. And the NVIDIA Shield is the other one. So there are three streamers currently that can do 4K streaming. And more to come. The new Chromecast doesn't do it. The new Apple TV doesn't do it. That's it.
I think the new Chromecast does do 4K, doesn't it?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Oh, I'll have to check.
I'm pretty sure not, but I could be.
It doesn't really matter because I don't have a TV that can use it. I have the NVIDIA Shield, and that is also a Chromecast device. So.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. The hardware is trivial, frankly. That's not the hard part. Hey, thanks, Scott.
My pleasure. See you.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, digital photography, all that jazz. 888-ASK. Leo is the number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. I'm a little perturbed. I'm a little worried, but I don't know yet if there's reason for concern. Kind of, what is it? You could apply that to a lot of things, couldn't you? I've been recommending for some time, and I stand by this recommendation, that everybody get a password manager. Passwords are horrible. Everybody acknowledges it. It's a terrible solution. We didn't really have to, you know, remember passwords until very recently, last 15 years of the internet. Before that, the most you had to remember was your school locker combination. But nowadays, we have to keep track of hundreds of passwords for virtually everywhere we go, every app we use, every site we use, and it's out of control. And, of course, when things get tough like that, people look for shortcuts. We all use them. We either use passwords that are not very secure, our children's birth date plus your maiden name, things like that. Or we use one password for many, many sites. That's very problematic of late because, as you know, sites keep getting hacked and the password database is grabbed. And unfortunately, if you use one password for many sites, the chances are high that somebody's going to discover that password and try it on all those sites. And now you've really got a problem. So the counsel that I give and all the experts give is you should create unique passwords for every site. They should be as long as that site allows. Longer is better. And they should be random. Well, what's the one problem with long, random passwords? No one can remember them. That's why you need a password manager. What a password manager does is it helps you create really good, strong passwords. It helps you keep track of those passwords, and in most cases, it'll even fill those passwords in when you go to a website or on an application on your mobile device, things like that. You still have to remember one password. That's the password to get into your password vault, but that's a lot better. And that one you can make long, but you know, memorable in a variety of ways. Use song lyrics or, you know, I give as the example. You remember the first line in A Tale of Two Cities? It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. Well, you can make a good password out of that by using the first character of each word and some punctuation and maybe adding your zip code or your childhood phone number at the end of that. That's going to be a good password that you can recreate, that you can remember. Use that for your password vault, and the rest should be created by the password vault. And a good password vault will even warn you. You've used that one before. It'll even help you change passwords. So for years, I've recommended, there are many password vaults, Dashlane and 1Password and RoboForm and on and on. There's even an open source one called KeePass, KeePass. But for years, I've recommended and I love and I use LastPass. I don't just use it personally. We use it in our company as well. There's an enterprise version and I love it. It's $1 a month for the personal version, $12 a year. Works on every device I have, not just my desktop computers, but my mobile phones and my tablets. It makes it so easy to create good, long, strong passwords and use them. Well, the news came out yesterday that LastPass had been purchased. Yeah, well, gulp. I mean, I don't even have to say who it is because that right there is cause for, like, who are these people going to treat my data as with as much integrity as LastPass has always traditionally? Joe Sigrist and his team are so good. You know, they've done such a great job, and now they've sold it. And you know, I can't blame them. It's a lot of work. Maybe the company bought them, came along with hundreds of millions of dollars and said, you've done a great job, let us take it from here. And who would say no? But now I have to, you know, say, well, do I trust this new company? I'll tell you, it's called LogMeIn. You're probably familiar with it. We've even recommended their products for remote access. They have, unfortunately, a history of acquisitions. They bought a company called Hamachi, which was a wonderful tool for gamers and so forth. It's complicated. You don't need to know what Hamachi did, but they effectively destroyed it. Oy, oy, oy. Hamachi was kind of like LastPass in the sense that it was a beloved tool used by many, relied upon by many, and everybody was nervous when LogMeIn bought them, and they broke it, basically. So now they own LastPass, and the question everybody's asking me is, well, is this, should I abandon, should I search for another password manager? I don't know what the answer is to that. I'm quite invested in LastPass, as you heard. Not only do I have all my, probably, I don't know, hundreds, maybe 1,000 passwords in there, but I also have my entire company's passwords, like important passwords, are in there. So I just don't know what to do. I just don't know what to do at this point. I guess I'll watch with interest to see what LogMeIn does. It might be worthwhile to investigate, is there a way to take your LastPass store of passwords and import them into another password manager? Start looking at other password managers, see which ones are best. I guess I'll be doing that work. Our security guy, Steve Gibson, you know, I've used LastPass since they started. I mean, for years. Our security guy, Steve Gibson, he does the Security Now podcast with me. He reviewed LastPass, talked to Joe Segrist, looked at the code, and gave it 2 thumbs up and said, this is absolutely the way you want to do it. He's always been high praise for them. I don't blame Joe for taking, it was $125 million, apparently. Can't blame a guy for doing that. But at the same time, now I have to think about this new company and what their policies will be, and will they be trustworthy? The good news is the technology, the architecture of LastPass does prevent them from seeing my password. So the immediate threat that maybe this company has nefarious purposes is you can put that to rest. Your password store is still secure unless they change the technology that LastPass uses and you accept those changes, which you probably shouldn't. Your password vault is still yours and safe. They hold it, but they don't have your password, so they can't unencrypt it. So I don't have an answer to you. I'm going to be doing some research. I'll be looking at other password managers. The open source one is attractive because that will never be sold. It will always be open source, and we always will know what it's doing exactly. Unfortunately, KeePass doesn't have the functionality that LastPass does, the ability to run on mobile devices across a broad variety of devices. It eliminates the one area of insecurity that LastPass has. LastPass is set up so that you can use it on a variety of devices, but that means they have to hold your password store on their servers at LastPass.com. As I said, it's encrypted. Only you have the keys. But in order to give you that multi-platform functionality that they do, they have to store it. KeePass doesn't do that. So you're kind of responsible if you use KeePass to figure out how to get your password store on different devices. I might just have to move there. At least there's no threat of that being sold to somebody. The commercial offerings, Dashlane and 1Password, RoboForm, and the others are good, I think. I don't have any problem with them. I don't have any reason not to trust them. But I don't know if they're as good as LastPass. It's a conundrum that comes up fairly frequently in the modern world. And I'm going to have to just look a little more closely, and I'll tell you what. I'll talk to Steve. I'll do some research. I hope I will have an answer to this troubling question. I mean, LogMeIn's a big company. They're a global company, 800 employees. It's not like they're I don't know if they're evil or not. I just don't know anything about them. I don't have any reason to think so, but I don't know anything about them. 8888-ASK-LEO. Now we got to figure out what to do, right? All right, your call's coming up next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. Back to the phones we go. Mike's in Los Angeles. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Leo. Nice to be able to talk with you.
Thanks for calling.
For years. Thank you. Thank you. I will be, I'm not the first one to admit it, that I'm not the most tech-savvy guy, but I'm really trying to up my game. And I do have an iPhone 6 Plus, and it is the 128 gig, and I'm getting a message. I'm looking at my in my general and my storage area, and it says that I'm running out of space here, that I have used up 113 GBs, and I have 170. Yeah, 170. Yeah, that's what your screener said. How the heck?
Yeah. So you got the 128 gigabyte iPhone.
Correct.
And you filled it up.
Yeah.
How did you do that? That's a lot of gigabytes. What are you putting in there?
Maybe videos from my iFlip or the flip phone.
Yeah, so you shouldn't your portable device shouldn't really become I have my house on my back. I've got everything in here because you can't, obviously. At some point you're going to run out of space.
I do have a backup hard drive backup as well.
Yeah, I don't think you need to store them on the iPhone unless you want to show them to somebody. I mean, there's a reason you need them.
Yeah, sometimes I like to throw them quickly up to Facebook or go to them for my web page, just a sport general commentary web page. So, but I don't know the right highways to pull them out of the cloud or to pull them.
Right. So areas. I think this is the first thing I would suggest is there's no reason to keep it on the phone. You can put it on, as you figured out, a cloud-based solution. And I'll tell you a few good ones that will allow you, when you want to see it, to stream it on the phone, even download it on the phone so you can post it somewhere. Now, that's going to add a step, but it's going to give you more space on your phone. It's pretty hard to fill up 128 gigs. I mean, I put almost all my music. If I put every song I have, I'd fill it up. But I have, you know, maybe 30 or 40 gigs of music. That's a whole lot of music on there. And the reason I put it on the phone is in case I'm on a plane and I can't stream it, that's when I want to listen to my music so I can go to sleep and not hear the baby behind me crying. You can also fill it up with video. It's easy to do, but you just have to be... I think the key is to be judicious. You can't be a pack rat. You can't put everything on this phone. Just put the stuff you're going to really need. And the rest you can put in cloud storage. Now, Apple, of course, offers their own cloud storage called iCloud. But it may not be the best choice. It's certainly not the most affordable choice for you. It's the easiest. My opinion is you'd get, for pictures, it's easy because you've got Google, Flickr, Amazon, Microsoft, and everybody offering unlimited free photo storage. So photos, even videos, put them on Google Photos. They'll take videos. Or Flickr, they'll take videos. And then you have access to it anytime. Flickr gives you a terabyte of storage free. That's about six or seven times more than's in your phone. That should be enough.
Well, Google is my main...
Google main Photos.
Server. So would that...
You already have a Google account through Gmail. So what you do is you go to photos.google.com, take a look at it. What you're going to want to do is put the photo uploader on your computer, your personal computer, and it will, over time, slowly upload all your photos and videos. You'll have to tell it where they are. And eventually, everything will be on there. There's some advantages to doing that. For one thing, Google categorizes stuff. So, I can easily search for pictures of my kids because I just click the Henry, and then I see all the pictures of Henry, and I have 30,000 photos on there. So it's really great. If you say, I want to get all the pictures I ever took of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, it knows. It has all that information in there. So that's one way to do it. Do you have a Microsoft Office account? Do you subscribe to Office 365?
I do not.
Okay. If you do, and there are many who do, and I do, you get unlimited free storage on OneDrive. That's Microsoft's cloud solution. So that's another good choice.
I have one of each computer. For my own little radio thing I do, I use a Mac, and for my main usage of storage and application, daily application, I use a Windows, which is giving me the same memory type of message. So I'm probably doing the same thing there.
Yeah, you are. I would get, you can get Google Photos Uploader for both Mac and PC. Start running it. It'll, by the way, coalesce them all into one account, your Google account. It'll always be visible at photos.google.com. You can upload originals, but there is a limit to the amount of storage you get for originals. I would let it manage it, upload in the photos and the videos will look great. Does all this categorization for you. Makes it easier to share it because you can share it from Google Photos to Facebook and everywhere else without having to upload it. It just puts it over there. I think this is your solution, at least for photos and videos.
Well, that's my main storage problem and organization. One last problem that I have, if I may.
Yeah.
When I first bought the iPhone 3, geniuses, and I mean that respectfully, they're great people over at the Apple
store. Hey, Apple started it. They called them geniuses. What are you going to do?
Right. They wanted to push to sell their
iCloud,
which was the cloud.
Yeah, but don't do iCloud.
It wasn't meant for the, as I found out after 24 hours of bringing my computer to different locations. But what it did is it replicated all of my calendars, all of my contacts. There was a redundancy.
There's always a problem.
I can't get rid of them.
Yeah, the first time you
sound like a bad in-law.
I know. The first time you sync. There's always this risk of, hey, I have ex-girlfriends in my contacts. I don't want them either. Yeah, there's always the risk of having this duplication problem. So the iCloud isn't horrible, but it's more expensive. I pay $1.99 a month for 200 gigabytes, and I reserve that for backing up my iPhone and my iPad. That's what I wanted to use it for. I don't want to use it for things like photo storage. Especially when you can get unlimited free photo storage. If you're an Amazon Prime member, I would use Google Photos. I think it's a perfect solution. It'll solve all the things that you want to do, and it'll get those photos eventually. You'll have to delete them using the iTunes or somehow, but eventually get those photos off your iPhone, and you'll have plenty of space.
But
you'll be amazed.
30 Leo reports and just have one Leo.
Yeah, you only need one Leo Laporte. So the other thing to do is now you don't have to, when you have an iPhone, you don't have to sync with iCloud. You can turn that off. You can go into your mail contacts settings, and you can say, do not sync my contacts. I want to use Google for that. This is what I would suggest. Do that. Turn it off. It will say, oh, you want me to delete all your contacts? Yes. From the phone? Yes. Oh, you want me to delete all your appointments from the phone? Yes. But you've already signed up, I hope and I presume, with Google on your iPhone. If you haven't, do that. And make sure in the settings that you're synchronizing contacts and calendar stuff with Google. We're going to use that, right? Now, you've turned off iCloud. You can go into iCloud, log into iCloud.com, and delete them there as well. What we want to do is take one and only one database, clean it up. You're going to have to manually clean it up. Google has some tools for deduping, for merging duplicate contacts. You're going to have to do that once. Then sync to empty databases on iCloud, and you won't have this problem again. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, yeah, he's been everywhere. Actually, Johnny Jett has been everywhere. Normally, he joins us at this hour, but he's in Doha, and apparently unable, I don't even know where Doha is, somewhere in the Middle East, and he's unable to reach us via the magic of Skype right now. But that's okay. We'll get Johnny Jett, our travel guru, back next week. Visit his website, johnnyjett.com, for more travel deals and great travel information. He's an expert on traveling. And, of course, as that expert, he has to continue to travel, and he's in the middle of nowhere. 8888, that's all right. No, Johnny Jett means more time for your calls. 8888 Ask Leo. Martin is in Rancho Cucamonga. Hi, Martin.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome.
I love your show. I've been all the way back to the days of Twit TV and
thank you.
The screensavers.
Ah, yes. The venerable screensavers. Ah, yes.
I have a question on a upgrade that I'd like to do on my iMac.
Okay.
I have a 27-inch iMac. Was made in 2011.
Yep.
And I like to put a solid state drive in it.
Oh, it's a great thing to do. It's hard to do in that particular model. You have the flat screen, right? The all-in-one?
Yes.
Yeah. So I've done this. Actually, I didn't even have the guts to do it. I had my engineers do it, and I watched. Because opening up this iMac requires not only the special tools to open it up, but you need a suction cup for the screen. You actually lift. This was the thing that scared me. You lift the glass screen out, and you have to do that to get in there to take out the spinning drive and replace it. So, but it's doable. If you feel confident, it's totally doable. It certainly will save you money over having somebody else do it. What I would suggest, though, is go to ifixit.com and look up that particular model. They'll have a step-by-step breakdown. They're kind of like, their goal in life is to have manuals for everything. And then they also, and the way they make money is they sell the parts and the tools so that you can do all this fix-it. You know, they even have manuals on how to fix McDonald's Happy Meal toys and the tool that you need to do that. So, they're crazy about this stuff. And I should give them a disclaimer. They have been in the past a sponsor. iFixit.com. Look at the video. Another place you can go, and they'll probably also have good videos, is Otherworld Computing. And that's where I would go to buy the drive, because you want to make sure the drive is compatible. And Otherworld Computing sells Mac stuff only. They sell great solid-state drives. Their Mercury drives are superb. But you'll want to go there and make sure you get exactly the right one for that particular iMac.
Now, my question, that will be my primary boot-up drive for basically the OS. As far as storage of my data files, pictures, videos, I'd like to put it on a traditional hard drive. Can I put leave the original hard drive in there?
You cannot. There's no room for it. So there.
So you have to use an external drive.
Yeah, but that's fine. That you have fast, high speed connections. I can't remember if the 2011 has Thunderbolt. I think it does. So
it does.
Yeah. So you get a Thunderbolt drive. That'll be as fast as an internal drive. And that's what I do. I have big external drives because you don't want to buy a giant SSD drive. They're very expensive per gigabyte. Really, what you want is just enough for your operating system and applications, and then you can use an external drive for your data.
What size would you recommend then?
I think 128 is kind of the minimum. I think 256 would be plenty, but you can find out just by looking at how you've used your drive currently. Don't look at data, just look at the applications folder and the system folder, and you'll see how much space is occupied. That'll give you some idea. 256 is absolutely enough unless you have giant programs.
What would be the best way of copying all the data files off the drive I have now, so I can transfer them to the Thunderbolt drive?
I use SuperDuper. Everybody who owns a Mac should probably own a copy of SuperDuper. There's a free version that will do this, but if you want to have some more features, there's a paid version as well. It's the king of the Mac copying programs. It'll even take your internal drive and duplicate it so that you can boot from the external drive, and that is nice. Because then if the internal drive dies, you always can run your computer still just by booting from the external drive. SuperDuper is fantastic.
Very good. And thank you so much, Leo.
They've sent me a link. You're welcome. The kit for a mid-2011 iMac, it says dual hard drive, so maybe you can put two hard drives in there. Looks like you'd have to look and make sure that this is the Mac you have. But apparently on the 27-inch mid-2011, you can get two hard drives in there. You can get an SSD and a terabyte spinning drive. That must be for the Fusion, the Mac, the iMacs that had a Fusion system in there. Well, check and see. But this is a $50 kit. And what you're buying with the kit is not the drives. You're buying the tools, the weird little suction cups, and the special spudger, and the and this special screwdriver, because, of course, Apple doesn't use normal screws. There is a funny scene in the Steve Jobs movie, also apocryphal, as most of the movie is, but there's a funny scene in which the original iMac, it's 30 minutes to the big presentation of the original iMac. This did not happen, by the way. But they need to, something won't work. The hello demo won't work. And they need to get into it. And Joanna Hoffman, his PR person, who is played by the wonderful Kate Winslet in this movie, says to the fake Steve Jobs, Michael Fassbender, well, why don't we just open it up and fix it? And he says, well, do you want to tell her or I? Or should I? And Andy Hertzfeld, who's also played brilliantly by somebody who sounds and looks just like Andy, who's a great guy. Andy says, you can't get in it because Steve didn't want anybody to open it up, so we've used a weird screw. Well, who has the screwdriver? Nobody does. All made up. It's true, though. That one little bit is true. It was a weird screw. It was a Torx screw, and you did have to have a special Torx screwdriver, which you could readily get, but you'd had to have that to open it up. It's true. Steve did not want people to open up his computer. And it's still that way today. So you need the special kit to open it up. You'll need the suction cups to remove the glass. There is a video, which is nice, out of iFixit.com. And then, depending on your model, I apparently on the 27-inch, you could put two drives in. So maybe that's the answer. I like the idea of an external drive, especially if you have a Thunderbolt port, because then you can do things like move it or duplicate it. Or if the computer dies, bring it in, and you could still have all your data would still be there. I love keeping the data external to the computer, or at least on a separate drive. 8888 Ask Leo. Joe is in Austin, Texas, one of my favorite cities. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Leo, how are you doing today?
I'm fabulous. How are you?
Excellent. I'm sitting outside my work and just enjoying the 82-degree weather, so fantastic here.
Nice.
Yes, sir. Two things. I had a question about a MacBook Pro. I am looking to buy one probably around the first or second week of December, and I'm wondering, should I go ahead and buy the currently shipping model, or would you recommend that I wait a little bit and see what they do with
patience,
Skylake chip?
Yeah, your patience might be rewarded, because Intel's Skylake, which is the sixth generation Intel processor, should be out. You know, it kind of is out, and Apple should be able to get it in quantities for the mobile part. And that's the key, by the way, the laptop part, in the next couple of 3 months. So I expect there'll be a MacBook announcement in the next couple of 3 months.
Okay, so as far as...
By the way, Skylake is not that much better than what is the last one? Broadwell? I can't remember.
I believe so. I think it is Broadwell.
Broadwell. It's not that... It's maybe a little faster, maybe a little bit better battery life. It's not as impressive an improvement as we've seen in the past. So, honestly, if you need the MacBook now... You go ahead and get it. I don't think you're gonna be so disappointed by the Skylake. You know, oh gosh, I wish I had Skylake. I think Apple's gonna probably not even make a big announcement. They're gonna do what they've done in the past, which is slipstream it and put out a press release. Now, you said that you had a second question, so I'm gonna put you on hold as we take a break, and I'll be back to you in a moment. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Joe in Austin, Texas. Question number two, Joe.
Yes. Traditionally, on my computer, I have a Mac Mini right now. I cannot recall the year. It was the year they went without an optical drive, the first year of that. And what I've been doing is, you know, just keeping the OS and all my programs and everything on the internal drive, and then keeping everything else on a USB external drive. My thinking is that when I do acquire this new MacBook, is I would move to a cloud storage provider. And I'm wondering I think I got something around probably 160 odd gigs of data.
That's a lot of data. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's between movies and music.
Cloud is fine, but you always have to understand that it's going to be the amount of data you store is going to be somewhat limited by your upstream bandwidth. There are services now that will send you a hard drive or let you send them a hard drive.
Okay.
And for 160 gigs, it might be worth doing that, but it's easy to figure out. Just take your upstream bandwidth on your internet connection. You know when they say 20 megabits down, 1.5 megabits up, or whatever it is?
Mm-hmm.
Look at what the up is. Remember, that's the most you're going to get. So reduce that by to 75%, okay? And then take that number, whatever it is, a megabit, and then divide the amount of data you want to store by that. And that'll tell you how many seconds it's going to take. It may take months.
Well, there, in all honesty, though, there's probably a bunch of that stuff that's could be duplicates. And
well, that's the thing. I don't for cloud storage, you generally don't want to back up big files like movies.
Yeah, most of my movies and music and stuff are bought through iTunes, so that is, I think, a tad trivial. But you know, it's mostly pictures and like movies I shot with my iPhone, right, and that sort of thing that are what I want to hold on to.
Well, start with, as I mentioned in our previous caller, Google Photos, because okay, you can for free back up all of the images and all of the videos to Google, and they'll store them and make them available on all your devices, and that's a great service. And I think Amazon Prime offers something similar. So you could take those out of the mix of things that you would back up to cloud storage, really, because it is on cloud storage. But really, if you're going to use a backup service like Carbonite, or if you're going to use OneDrive, you should back up your own data, and not pictures, not rich media. And the good news is for videos, home shot videos and pictures, Google and Amazon do that for free. So, you know, take advantage of that. Absolutely take advantage of that. And then you only have to back up your Word documents and, you know, your email and those things. And they're not that big.
Yeah, I been shooting a little video with my iPhone 6S Plus. I haven't really ventured out into the 4K territory yet, but
they will get big. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I believe it. I would hope that whatever cloud service, I'm thinking probably Google, because they seem to be pretty popular.
So the first thing you would do on your iPhone, and I've done this, is you download Google Photos. It's a free app. Just go into the settings and say backup. Now the key on this is you're going to want to, you have two choices on the backup. And if you go into backup and sync, you'll see that your choices are to upload the full quality of the image or the original. The high quality of the image or the original. The original will take up your Google Drive storage, which means you will quickly fill up Google Drive. High quality is unlimited. And in most cases, I don't think anybody needs any more than high quality. You're still going to have the original. So this is so that you now have this database on everywhere. So as you take the photo, it will upload, and my photos immediately upload to Google Photos, but I also have them uploading to everybody else, because why not? But Google Photos is a great solution, and that'll include photos and video. And I love it, because after I've taken pictures, I can then immediately go to, you know, Google Photos, and there's all my pictures. If I say, oh, that picture is great, I'd like to share that picture, I can share it with a variety of different services. You can also, if you wish, edit it. I mean, I just feel like this is a great solution, and that's going to save you a lot of expensive cloud storage. So, because it's free. So use that for photos and videos. And then, you know, Carbonite's a great choice. They're an advertiser, but so's OneDrive, Dropbox. There are a lot of these services. Pricing varies considerably. Apple charges $1.99 a month for 200 gigabytes. So remember, you had 160. So you could get everything you want to store. I wouldn't recommend it, but you could, for $2 a month from iCloud. And since you're using a Mac, that's probably the easiest solution. It's not the most inexpensive. And then there are a number of solutions that will, you know, Amazon Glacier, for instance, will allow you to mail them a hard drive. So if you really say, you know, I got to back up this terabyte, there are services. I'm going to have to make a list of those. We'll put them on the website, techguylabs.com. And then remember, of course, if you're uploading photos, you can say, only do that on Wi-Fi. If you have limited data on your cellular company, make sure you check that box. I think it's checked by default. Only on Wi-Fi, and then it'll upload when you get home. I'm not getting paid by Google to sell this. I just think it's a great service. Apple will do this with iCloud if you have enough iCloud storage with their Photos app, and I do turn that on as well. So anything that any video or stills that I shoot on my iPhone are automatically backed up in at least two places. I like that idea. Why not, right? Did they drop the price on I know they were going to change the price September 25th. Did they drop that below $1.99 for 200 gigabytes? That would be nice. You know, the good news is there's such competition now between cloud storage services. The prices are dropping to almost nothing. Nothing in some cases. Google's nothing. Amazon, if you have a Prime account, is nothing. OneDrive, if you subscribe to Office, is nothing. They're making money on other stuff. The storage is kind of free. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let me tell you about our website. I want to get to the phones, but I think we're going to have to take a break for news at the top of the hour. So Greg, he's calling from Rosslyn, British Columbia, and Jeff from Ventura, and Habil from Dana Point, and Frederick in El Segundo. You hang on, because we're going to get to your call after news at the top of the hour. If I mention something or you hear something or I say something like, oh, I got to make a list of file cloud storage companies, they'll send you a hard drive. That stuff's all on the website, techguylabs.com. You don't have to write this down. Just remember it. I'm the tech guy, you know, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And then the labs, where I work in a lab coat with goggles and a little Bunsen burner. Techguylabs.com, that's where you'll find everything. And you can add comments, which is great. Get lots of comments. That makes it more valuable. It's free, no sign up. Techguylabs.com. More of your calls coming up right after this. Here's my pill pack. Oh, I love this thing. Actually, this is Elliot Williams' pill pack. My pill pack's at home. This is a great pharmacy with a brilliant idea. One of the things that we really like to do with our advertisers is show advertisers that are using technology, using the internet in a unique way to take the old way of doing business and bringing it to the new way. And this is a perfect example. With PillPack, it's an online pharmacy. You can move your prescriptions over there. In fact, I'm going to give you some incentive to do that in just a little bit. But they solve a really big problem. And this was a problem for me. So I get my medications, my supplements, the things that I need to take every day. And I try to keep track of them. Eventually, I got a pill minder and all of that stuff. And you don't know, did I forget? I can't remember. Did I already? It's crazy. Plus, the chance of taking the wrong medication, especially as you get older and you have more and more medications, gets pretty severe. PillPack solves this. This is the PillPack. When you get your prescriptions, they come in a box like this, and they deliver them directly to you for free. You can always call the PillPack pharmacists. They're available 24/7. So if you have questions, when do I take this with food? When do I take? They can answer all those questions. And look at this. Now, this is just supplements. They do supplements, too. So this guy, Elliot's taking cranberry, fish oil, melatonin, multivitamin, vitamin B. Now, the melatonin, obviously, he doesn't want to take in the morning because that makes you sleepy. So this is his – so what they do is they put them in a pack. They print the date, the time, what's in it, so that you know exactly, and you just tear it off. Whoa. And there's the pills. It's – by the way, even grandma and grandpa won't have any trouble with this. It's an easy open pack. And you know exactly, there's never a question, did I take my pills? Did I take the morning pills? Am I doing this right? There's no extra cost beyond your standard copay for medication. Shipping is always free. It is compatible with most insurance plans, including most forms of Medicare Part D. PillPack is such a brilliant idea. And by the way, if you want to move your prescriptions over, don't worry. They'll proactively call your doctor. They'll handle the whole thing. They'll manage your refills for you. You actually, you know, you don't have to look at the bottle and say, oh, I'm almost out. It comes. It says, okay, here's your refill automatically. Time magazine called it one of the top 25 inventions last year. Jill Duffy, I don't know if you know Jill, she's a regular on our network. She gave it a rave in PC Magazine. There's even an app for the iPhone and the Apple Watch, a medication reminder app. If you've got family members, parents maybe, who are taking medications, it's vital for them to take. If you just want to keep track of what you're taking and take it at the right time, if even supplements, pillpack.com/twit. Sign up now. When you use our link and transfer your prescriptions over, you'll get a credit for $20 worth of vitamins and over-the-counter medications. PillPack, PILLPACK.com/twit. Save big. And, man, talk about convenience. This is brilliant. Poor Elliot. I hope he doesn't mind I'm taking his vitamins. They're good. Pill pack. No, I'll put them over there. Pill pack. I already take my own. Pillpack.com/twit. We thank him for their support. Actually, a little more fish oil, a multi, vitamin B, vitamin C, D. That's all good stuff. That's all good stuff. I love this idea. It's so convenient. And there's your pharmacist number. You can email them. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And this is the Tech Guy Show, a chance to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888-ASK. Leo, the number 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S., outside that, or Canada, outside that area. Well, you can, just use Skype. Won't cost you anything. Speaking of Canada, from British Columbia, Greg is on the line. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for holding on so long. What can I do for you?
I'm calling to ask about charging up my smartphone. I've got a quick charge capable phone.
Good.
And it was supplied with a 1-amp charger. The Walmart would deliver 5 watts.
Yeah, that's not a quick charge plug-in thing.
So I was shopping around for a little Walmart, and I decided not to buy the one that was $10. I went with something a little bit more expensive, but could I damage my phone?
No.
With a crappy Walmart?
Well, no. The worst that could happen is it could burst into flames. The Walmart could burst into flames and burn your home down. But the phone itself would be safe. and this is an interesting thing. So this quick charge thing is generally comes from a company called Qualcomm. They make the chips in most phones, the Snapdragon parts. And Qualcomm has this quick charge 2.0. The idea, you got the right idea, is if you get a charger that has a higher amperage, usually on the order of 10, 11, 12 watts, that would be 2 to 2.2 amps, you'll get a faster charge. In fact, something like the Moto X Pure Edition, which supports this, charges about halfway in half an hour and all the way in about an hour. And these newer phones need this because, unfortunately, they can't get through the day without being charged. But there's circuitry in all smartphones that prevent damaging the battery, and that's the real key on this. You can damage a lithium-ion battery in a couple of ways. One, by charging it too fast. It'll cause it to heat and break down the chemicals inside. The other is by overcharging it, which could cause it to burst into flames and even, in some extreme cases, explode. A lithium-ion battery is kind of a little bomb. But all phones have, and in fact, all devices with lithium-ion batteries, unless they're really poorly made, have some sort of circuitry in there to keep the charge from going too fast or going too far. So you can trust that the phone will protect itself, in other words. So go ahead and try. I get mine from Anker, A-N-K-E-R. They make quick charge wall warts that are, if it says Qualcomm quick charge or quick charge 2.0 on it, then it's licensed from Qualcomm and it's going to be safe. It's going to be the right voltage, the right amperage and all of that. It is completely possible that you could buy some junky piece of thing that, you know, that would itself be dangerous, but the voltage, the wattage coming from that into the phone, it's highly unlikely unless it sends 1,000 volts. It's not going to hurt your lithium ion battery or your phone. Okay?
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, nothing to worry about. I get the Anchors, but there's a lot of companies that make these. You're in Columbia, British Columbia. I'm not sure if you can go on Amazon and order these, if Amazon.ca has it, but I get them all on Amazon. A-N-K-E-R, great little company, and they work great. You know, there are risks. In fact, we've heard some stories in China about people being burnt by their, quote, iPhone or their iPhone exploding on the wall. Those are not actual. I am almost certain those are not actual Apple iPhones. They're clones. They're poorly made clones. So it is possible, and this is one of the reasons we don't recommend you get kind of no-name electrical parts on eBay or from Chinese sources. You get one that's from a company that's reliable. Mono. If anything you buy on monoprice.com is going to be okay. If you buy Anker, Anker is my favorite brand for this kind of stuff. That's safe. That's a good company. It's well-run. Anything that's well-run is going to be okay. And the phones themselves, as long as you're not buying cheap knockoffs, are going to protect you. That's true of laptops, everything else. 8888 Ask Leo. Frederick is in El Segundo, California. Hi, Frederick.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing, boss?
I'm sorry?
I said, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, good. All that talk about that Casper mattress before made me want to have a little sleep.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I feel like Siri. You have a wonderful, it's a Scottish accent?
No, Liverpool.
Liverpool, even better. You're a Scouse. You got a little bit of a Scouse accent.
There you go.
You'll forgive me. I'm as dumb as Siri when it comes to accents, so I'll do my best.
Don't worry about it. People get confused all the time.
I love it.
So it's all good.
It's a great accent.
Leo.
Yes.
I've got a question for you. Okay, yeah. I'm with AT&T at the moment, and I'm getting like just internet from them. And it's just like, I don't know if it's 3 megabits or megabytes. I don't know what
megabits. That's what they usually measure megabits. Bandwidth is in megabits.
Okay. So basically, I don't know why we got this like cheap whatever. But anyway, I'm going to be switching to,
because they, when you get, I know what you're talking about. When you get a internet service from a company, they often will give you not just the modem that you need, but a router, a Wi-Fi router with it. And
well, this is what I'm sorry.
I generally don't recommend those. You're exactly right. They give you the cheapest thing. Probably 4 other people have owned it before you. It's probably old and out of date.
Okay, so my question is with you now. I'm going to be switching to Time Warner Cable, and they offer it's called Ultimate 110 or something.
Yeah.
Up to 100 megabits or megabytes, and they want me to rent a modem from them for like $10 a month.
Right.
But my thing is, if I can buy my own modem, but I want Wi-Fi as well, because my Wi-Fi is terrible here.
Right.
And I've got up to 5 devices what runs off
so
Wi-Fi.
Time Warner will tell you which modems they allow you to use.
Yeah, they did, but I was curious as to think, because I want Wi-Fi as well.
I wouldn't combine them. You do want Wi-Fi, but don't get a combined unit. Get a separate modem. You're going to get a Motorola or an Aris. Whatever they tell you to get, make sure it's DOCSIS, DOCSIS 3. That's the latest kind of.
Can you repeat that? Sorry?
DOCSIS, DOCSIS 3.
Yeah.
Anything you buy in the store shelf will be DOCSIS 3. And make sure Time Warner's giving you a DOCSIS 3 server. They probably are, but if they're not, say, hey, I want DOCSIS 3. And they'll go, oh, okay, we'll connect you to that one. That's much better performance, okay? But if you're getting 100 megabit service, you're probably getting a DOCSIS 3 setup.
Yeah,
now, you're going to hook that modem into a router and get a good Wi-Fi router. I recommend and I use and I love them. They've been great to me from a company called Asus, A-S-U-S.
Yeah.
I use the Asus. It's a little more expensive. You may not. I'll give you a cheap one if you don't want to spend this much money. This was over $200, but boy, I love it. The AC3200, that's their top of the line Asus Ultra, that Ultra Wi-Fi router. I've had great results because it works not just on 2.4 gigahertz, but they also have 2 additional bands in the 5 gigahertz range. And I find that works quite well in a variety of noisy environments. You will, if you have an old router, getting a new one makes a big difference. Get a new router. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was saying, yeah, I'm next to the airport, so it does get loud here. But, I went to Best Buy today, actually, and the guy was said, you know what, I recommend that you get 2 different, you know, don't go with the old.
Yeah, get separates.
And everything.
You remember in the old days of hi-fis, you get it all in one, and you get separates. Get separates.
So get separates. So I wrote that down there, what you recommended.
Now, if you want to save a little money, the wire cutter also recommends for your router a $100 router from TP-Link. That they say the Archer C7, they say is excellent. It would be not as good as the AC3200, but it saves you a couple $100. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I'll put this all in the show notes. When that music plays, I got to stop. But I will put those in the show notes. I'm sorry that I had to rush you through it. Are you still there, Frederick?
Yeah, I'm here, bud.
Oh, good. Okay, we're off the air, but we're still talking.
All right, mate. Okay, that's good.
I realize I rushed through that. So,
No, it's cool. It's fine.
All right.
Like the guy at Best Buy today, he was like, you know what? Don't go with the built-in Wi-Fi. He said, that's not really that good.
He's right.
Like I said, I'm not really computer savvy as well. Or, you know, when it comes to modems and Wi-Fi and routers. So I wrote that down there. Is that all available, like, you know, like from Fry's, Best Buy?
I'd get it on Amazon. Yeah. But you can go to Fry's.
Amazon account.
Yeah. Well, go to Fry's or Best Buy. That's fine. So the TP-Link Archer C7 is $87 at Amazon.
TP-Link C7.
Archer, like a bow and arrow guy, an Archer C7. That's cheap, but it only has two bands, 2.4 and 5 gigahertz. I've been really happy with the Asus AC3200, but it's over $200. It's very expensive.
I'm not bothered about the price, because you know what? If you were to rent a unit from them guys over 2 years, it pays for itself anyway, so...
I agree with you. I mean, you're paying $10 a month. It's $120. In 2 years,
exactly.
You pay for yourself. The modem should be cheap. The Aeris modem, whatever they recommend, that should be cheap. That should be $50-$60. But it's worth getting a good router, especially... And when I say noisy, I don't mean like planes going overhead. I mean Wi-Fi. If there's a lot of other Wi-Fi.
We have 5 like devices that we need to run off, you know what I mean? Like phones and Roku and, you know, other stuff. Like I've got like an Android box that, you know, to watch movies and stuff.
You could go back to Best Buy. If you get something from Asus, you'll be okay.
Yeah, I've seen them today. All right, boss. Hey, Leo, cheers, big man.
Cheers. Good to talk to you.
All right.
Bye.
Take care.
Wait, before you go.
Go on. Yeah.
Which football club do you support?
Oh, I'm an Everton fan.
Okay, just had to find out.
Everton. Oh, not Liverpool. No. Blue all the way, boss. Tim Howard.
I love it.
Will he be in goal? Will he be in goal tonight? In Mexico on Monday?
I'll be watching
later on. That'll be a good one. Have a beer.
Oh, which beer?
It depends. I drink all kinds of different stuff.
Okay. You're not finicky on that. Okay, Frederick. It's great to talk to you.
All right, big man.
Cheers.
Hey, take care, mate.
Bye. Oh, man, I could listen to him all day. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Just read a great article. I'm not trying to find it. I think it was the New York Times. About routers, of all things. Yeah, it was. The New York Times, it says, if your Wi-Fi is terrible, check your router. It's the personal tech column by Brian X. Chen, who is, by the way, very smart, very good, recent hire. I think it was pretty recent hire by the New York Times, but he's smart. I mean, you don't think of the New York Times as like being like PC Magazine, but you know what it is. And the point he makes, which is absolutely right on, is... that we, you know, get a router and we install it and we forget about it for 10 years. And the truth is, if your router, he says this, and I agree, if your router is more than 3 years old, you probably would benefit by getting a new one. Now, you can spend a lot or a little. And I did mention that Archer C7 from TP-Link, and widely agreed that's a very good budget router at $87. Don't get the $40 Linksys. That's tempting. Don't. But I am a big fan of Asus's routers because for a couple of reasons. But one is they keep their firmware up to date. Whoa, what a concept. A router is a computer. It's got a chip, you know, a microprocessor. It's got memory. It's got an operating system. It's got software. It's a dumb computer, admittedly, not a great computer, but it does what it needs to do, which is take incoming internet traffic and route it to the right computer in your system. And if it's a wireless router, well, then it's also transmitting and receiving just like a radio station. You know, it's or a ham radio because it's receiving as well. And there's a big difference in circuitry and capability, but the biggest difference of all is a security issue, and that is most router companies, these things are so cheap, don't keep them up to date. And when there's a security flaw, they just don't fix it. And we know this is a big problem. In fact, Christmas Day this last year, if you were lucky enough to get a PlayStation 4 for Christmas or an Xbox One for Christmas, you might have noticed you couldn't use it. And I just assumed, oh, well, it's just busy because everybody else got a new, you know, game machine. They're all trying to play games. No. A hacker group called Lizard Squad took down the PlayStation Network and the Microsoft Network. And you know how they did it? By taking over old routers. Turns out, I mean, these are little computers, remember? They're connected to the internet. There is a flaw, very common flaw in routers. The Lizard Squad was able to find enough hundreds, maybe thousands, probably tens of thousands of routers subject that had this issue. They could hack them remotely over the internet, take them over, and use them to attack the PlayStation Network and the Microsoft Network. And so many packets came in that those networks were brought down all day Christmas Day by these teenagers. These teenagers, because of junky routers. So you're not just doing yourself a favor, you're doing the internet a favor by getting a good router, and especially getting it from some company that takes this seriously and updates them. So Asus, if you go in the store and you see an Asus router, and you know, get the best one you can afford. As I said, the AC3200, which is the one I have, is amazing. And you can put your own firmware on it. If you get more advanced, you can patch it. You can do a lot of things to it that you can't do to those commodity priced routers. There's a reason to spend more. And you know, Frederick was right. He says I'm willing to spend more on this because this is your internet access. And you know, there's nothing worse than I used to hear this till I got a new router. The pained cry from the other room, honey, the Wi-Fi's down again. Working for me. No, not working here. Oh, you don't want to hear that. And I'll be honest with you. For years, I recommended Apple's AirPort Extreme. That's what we used with AirPort Express repeaters. Man, ever since I took that thing out and put in the Asus, everything's gone away. I don't hear that anymore. So highly recommend a good brand new router. And I agree with Brian X. Chen. If you've been having trouble with your Wi-Fi, consider getting a new router, especially if it's more than 3 years old. And I'll tell you what, we'll put a link to this article, which came out this week in the Tech Fix column. New York Times, of all places, so pleased to see them covering this. It's really great. By the way, it will make a difference in speed, too. That AC3200, a speed demon. And I did benchmark tests on the AirPort Extreme, very expensive Apple router, and compared it, and it's light years faster. Light years faster. Jeff in Ventura County, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, great. I was hoping I'd have to never call you, but my cursor was going to scrolling up to the top left, and I couldn't get it to fix, so I tried to go to...
You know, I mean, all on its own. It was just going up there.
Yeah, I'd go on to a file and to Explorer or whatever it was, and it would just automatically scroll to the top. I couldn't even scroll down. It keeps going back up. So then I went into PC reset and decided to reset my PC, keeping all the files. And now I'm stuck in reboot, Windows restart, hell.
Uh-oh.
Keeps going back and just keeps redoing it.
So, how old is your machine?
My machine's 3 years old.
Okay. Not very old.
And I just upgraded to Windows 10 about 6 weeks ago with no problems until today.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, boy. So, the mouse going up in the left-hand thing there, I don't know what that could just be, a messed up mouse. It could even literally be, I don't know, is it a optical mouse? I think all mice are optical these days.
It's an optical mouse, but that I tried to just, I unplugged the mouse.
Yeah.
Tried to disable it.
Yeah.
I went and tried to uninstall the mouse drivers. Still did it.
Still just went up to the upper left-hand corner.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting. Did you disconnect the keyboard as well?
It's a laptop.
Yeah. Okay, so this was a trackpad, not a mouse.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, no, I have an optical mouse, too. Logitech.
And so the same thing happened with the optical mouse as happened with the trackpad.
Correct.
In other words, if the mouse isn't connected, it still happens.
It's not even the mouse pointer. It's the cursor. Automatically scrolls up to the left, top left.
Oh, of the Word document.
Word document in...
Not the window. It's not just going all the way up on the screen. It's going into the document you're in.
So if I open up a folder with a bunch of files in it, it automatically wants to pick the top left file. If I go onto the internet and I PC something and scroll down, it wants to scroll back up.
Okay, that sounds like a trackpad flaw. But, of course, we first have to get you into your Windows machine before we can fix this. that does sound like a trackpad flaw. And you can disable the trackpad and see what happens. My guess is that's... You did, and it still happened.
Yep.
Could be software, especially now that your Windows has crashed. Did you have anything on that hard drive you need?
Well, I have a storage. I use one of those online storage.
Okay, so you're backed up.
A hard drive.
Yeah. So at this point, this is a recovery. It's time for recovery. The nice thing about Windows 10, and I think Windows 7 too, certainly Windows 8 and Windows 10, is they have a very nice recovery mode that'll let you go back to the factory settings, and it's already on the hard drive. So you could, if you have a phone or another device, just Google factory recovery for your model. You'll be able to do it quickly and easily. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Could be a keyboard as well. Almost certainly sounds like a keyboard or trackpad issue, like a physical hardware issue, gunk in the keyboard or whatever. But then you can't boot, so you want to do a recovery on that for sure. Not Windows 7, just Windows 8, 8, 1, and 10. Okay, that's right. Yeah, that was a nice feature they added in Windows 8. How do you do that if you can't get into the control panel? Is there a... what's the key combination? You just boot into the text menu? Is that what you do with F8? Should try it, because this machine's been a mess, too. I haven't been really incented to fix my Dell since I'm buying the Surface Book. But I'm going to try that right now. By the way, if it comes time for you to buy a new device, can I make a recommendation? Think of Gazelle, both to buy and sell. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. Let's start with the sell. Getting rid of that old gadget or goodie could get you some money, enough money to buy a new one. They buy smartphones and other devices for a great price. And then if you decide you want to buy from them, they also sell certified pre-owned devices at a very good price. And what's nice is you can count on Gazelle. Everything they sell has been tested with their rigorous 30-point inspection. And that includes screen. You know, there's no scratches. And you're going to get a great price. So to buy or to sell, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, they have a great selection of pre-owned devices. iPhone 4S through 6 Plus. They have iPads, Air and Mini. And everything, Galaxy phones, and everything is, there's, as I said, certified. You also have 30 days to return it, so you don't have to worry about it. And the devices for all the major carriers, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, and Sprint. They have a couple of three different conditions. You can get it like new, good condition, which shows some gentle signs of wear and tear, but gives you an even better price. And you never have to worry about it. They're always fully working and fully reliable. What a great place to go to trade in your old device for cash or to buy a certified pre-owned one or do both. Shipping is free. Payment is fast when you sell. When you buy, everything's backed by a 30-day return policy, and you can always get unlocked devices. No carrier contract. They'll work with any carrier, but you can check and see. If you know what, your kid loses the phone, this is a great place to go to replace it. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, gazelle.com. We love them. As always, I thank them for their support of the Tech Guy Show, but I also thank them for their support by buying a lot of my old used gadgets. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, gazelle.com. Lou M.M. in the chat room, he works at Microsoft, knows a little thing or two about Windows. He says Windows 10 is pretty good about fixing itself, so don't necessarily rush to the, you know, recover operating system options in the reboot. Just keep going. It'll offer, you had a problem. Gives you this little sideways smiley face. I see you had a problem. Would you like me to try to fix it and go through the steps and let it see if it can fix it? It is pretty good about doing that. It's a pretty good idea. I have to say, I'm impressed. I made a mistake, and I don't recommend it, but I've told you this before. I'm using Windows 10, which I like. But then if you want, they have the Windows Insider program. They're still doing it, which means you get to test pre-release versions of Windows. And I am on the Insider program. And I thought, well, I'll keep doing that. And then they give you a choice between the slow ring, they call it, slow ring or fast ring. If you're on the slow ring, you don't get the most cutting edge updates. So I said, well, I want to be on the fast ring because I am the tech guy. Holy. So maybe that's impacted the reliability a little bit. I want to step back a little bit and say, you know what, maybe I should just use the regular version for a while. However, if you have a Windows 10 machine, for the most part, I think the compatibility has been very good. I have heard people complain. There is a new version, a big update coming up next month. They call it Threshold 2, and that should fix a myriad of problems. Nabil is in Dana Point. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Nabil.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for calling.
I just had a quick question. You probably had this question before, but I probably didn't hear it. I have a MacBook Air. It's a 2011. And when I'm looking at my storage, it has, like pictures, videos, apps, and then there's a big section that says other. And I've been trying to look online.
What the heck is other?
Yeah, pretty much.
Is that you're saying on a MacBook, not an iPhone? Because that's a real problem on the iPhone.
Yeah, it's a MacBook Air.
It says other.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. There's some programs that will help you with this that will let you kind of see what's going on, visualize what's being used, and might tell you more than just other. Where are you seeing other?
I just go to system preferences, and there's this storage. Yeah, like what your computer is storing. Huh. And, I have about 10% of it be music and about 5% be pictures and whatnot. And about 65% is other. And online it was just saying it's just, little files here and there or backup files. I tried, deleting everything, but it's still there. It's about half of my storage is other.
Well, other is so uncommunicative. I'm going to recommend a program I've recommended before that I think will tell you more than other. It's called Disk Inventory X. It's a Macintosh program. There are other similar programs for PCs and other operating systems, but you have a Mac. I think it's free. And what it does is it'll show you what is being used, and it does big color blobs for different kinds of files. So what you can look for is, where are the big blobs? You can then click on them, and it will tell you exactly what those blobs are. So this is called Disk Inventory X. If you Google Disk Inventory X, you'll find it right away. It's from Derlien. Don't get it from some other source, Derlien.com. If you're on Windows, there's a great program that this is actually based on, called WinDerStat. And it's on SourceForge, which unfortunately is not the best place to get it. But get Derlien's program, Disk Inventory X, and I think you'll like it a lot. It's an excellent program for telling you visualizing what's the other. Now, I would guess that I'll just be guessing here, but I'm pretty sure that what it is temporary files. So, as you know, your browser, when it visits a website, caches the contents of that website, especially the big stuff like images, puts them in a temporary folder so that the next time you visit the website, you don't have to download all that stuff again. It can rebuild the page, and it makes a huge difference. It's a lot faster. Cache can also be stuff you deleted, but it wants to keep around. It could be your trash can. There's lots of things it could be. I've seen other on an iPhone and an iPad, and I always thought that was kind of a cop out from Apple, but I have not seen it. I didn't realize that that's what they called it on a Macintosh. I've not seen that. In most cases, if it's temporary files, you can delete them. In fact, in every case, it's a temporary file. That's the definition, right? I don't really need this, but I'd like to keep it around. You can go into your browser and delete history. Well, don't delete history. Delete caches, because you might want to keep your history, but the cache is what you want to clear. I wonder what other files other could be. That's funny. I've never really noticed that. But you're right. You know, if you have an older MacBook Air, like 2011, as he has, that's 128 gig hard drive probably. That's not a huge amount, and it would be easy to overrun it with other, whatever that might be. Bellflower, California. Jim, you're next. Hi, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good afternoon. I just bought a HP with 8.1 window.
Yeah.
Operating system. Yeah. And I don't like that system. It says, can I do anything to Windows 7?
You can buy Windows 7. You could call HP and say, hey, I don't like this operating system. When you first bought the computer, in some cases, Dell will do this. You could say Windows 7, although that's getting less common now that Windows 10 is the current version. You will get an offer at some point soon to upgrade to Windows 10. You might do that. You might try it, because I think Windows 10 is a lot more like Windows 7. I think a lot of the things people really hated about Windows 8, like that giant full-screen start menu, can't even really call it a start menu, that's really designed for a tablet, not for a desktop computer. You want a desktop. You want a start menu. Microsoft kind of said, oh, we're sorry. We blew that. And in Windows 10, they brought it all back. So what I really would suggest, Jim, is I understand. I didn't like Windows 8 either. You probably have used Windows 7 or even going farther back, Windows XP or Vista. Windows 10 will make you much happier. You do want to use, in most cases, the most recent operating system, because that will have security fixes and be more reliable and all of that. So, Jim, what I would do is wait, and soon you will be asked, would you like Windows 10? And you say yes. It's free, and I think you'll like it a lot better. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So what does Apple say? Yeah. Yeah, so there you go. Look at all that other 261 gigabytes. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Just real quickly, I looked up an Apple tech note. We'll put this in the show notes about other. What the heck is the other in about when you go to about this Mac? Other is anything that doesn't fit into one of five categories. This is Apple basically condescending, patronizing you. Other is anything that's not audio, photos, movies, apps, or backup. In other words, it's your data. It's your word processing documents, your emails, all the important stuff. But Apple decided, well, it's not in one of those five categories, so we're just going to say it's other. And no wonder people are, you know, kind of saying, wow, 250 gigabytes of other. What is that? Well, it's
that
the stuff
is a riot.
You know, this is condescending. I have to say, this is Apple saying, oh, you just don't need to know. Get a good program like Disk Inventory X and you'll know what other is. Hey, that guy there is like the other category on this show. He's an other.
Yeah. The other, exactly. Not a whiz, not a computer expert.
He doesn't answer questions, doesn't talk about travel. What does he do? He's the Gizwiz, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, Dick DiBartolo. First of all, tomorrow, if you're in the New York City area, you should go to his meetup if you're a fan of Dickie D. You do this every year at the Boat Basin Cafe, right?
Exactly. And if they're Twit fans, also OMG Chad is flying in.
That's so exciting.
To be there too.
That's nice of Chad to do that.
Well, it's my miles, but it's okay.
Oh, you gave him miles?
No, I sent him a ticket.
Are you still a Continental guy?
United. Continental went out 5 years ago. They merged, yeah. So I had enough miles and I got him a freebie ticket.
Nice. So everybody, how do they need to RSVP or just show up?
At this point, just show up. 2 to 4 p.m., Boat Basin Cafe. If you need more, gizwiz.biz.
That's his
website.
Click
on Dick's Log.
Dick's Log. Now, Dick usually brings us a fun gadget or gizmo.
Well, this fun gadget, Leo, is really for you. Okay?
I need
so
it, then.
About 3 weeks ago, I bought a new TV. I bought a Vizio.
Nice.
And I bought a 4K.
How big did you get?
The biggest I can handle is 43 inches, which is their smallest.
It's a 4K. New York apartment, everybody.
It's a New York apartment.
Some people don't even have TVs.
No. Some people with the big TVs, you just watch your neighbors because the apartments are so close.
And the nice thing is neighbors are in high def.
Exactly. And that's why in the alleyway you hear, hey, could you put on the ball game?
So good, nice.
Okay, so I got an invite from Vizio. Come see our new TVs, and I go, oh, I can't believe it. 2 weeks, and now I'm gonna find out my TV is old.
Of course,
but I went, and they were showing a TV for you.
Oh, good. Okay. I need a TV. I only have five. Okay.
Oh, good. Okay. It's now called, they have only two in this category. Okay. The Reference Series, the industry's first complete high dynamic range solution.
That's what I want.
You know this?
No.
Dolby Sound and Dolby Video, which I didn't even know existed. All right. So you have two choices, Leo.
Okay.
65-inch.
Yeah. Too small.
Oh, okay. Then you're going to love this.
Yeah.
The next model and only other model is 120 inches.
A 10-foot.
Okay.
How much is that?
$130,000. Or.
Yes.
Look at it more like $1,010 per inch.
Oh.
Maybe that's
much more affordable. Wow. This is interesting. I mean, you know, Vizio has had in the past really been seen as kind of a second tier budget manufacturer. But I think they've, and Scott Wilkinson, I know, agrees, they've rapidly become a high end television manufacturer.
Well, they certainly, you know, I'm very happy with my 4K, and it was $600, and Best Buy had a 10% off day, so it was like $540.
It's pretty cheap. Yeah. Wow.
You know what? I was looking at TVs, and it didn't have enough HDMI ports, and then I they were all running 350, 400. And then I saw the video, 5 HDMI ports, and I thought, this is $100 more than the non-4K sets.
Right.
And right.
You know, I think it's rapidly getting to be time to get a 4K set. You know, my iPhone shoots 4K video, right? I don't have any. I'm only 1080p because up to now there hasn't been any content. But
soon the blue DVDs
will come out, right?
Exactly. It said immediate access to people who buy these sets. Immediate access to certain Warner Brothers 4K Ultra HD Dolby Vision. That's going to be coming via Vudu.
Oh.
And Netflix is starting, will be starting to do 4K.
Streaming 4K, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's right. So remember, you want the 120-inch. Don't get the 6. Leo, 265s, that only comes to $12,000, and you'd have a 130-inch TV.
Perfect.
There you go.
And then I just have to put on my Poindexter glasses. Oh, you've already got them. And then I could see separately each screen.
It'll be 3D.
Go play the What the Heck Is It contest, my friends, at gizwiz.biz. That's Dick's website. You'll also see notes about all the products that he talks about on not just this show, but all of the big shows. He is the gadget guru, the GizWiz. And, of course, tomorrow was it 4 to 6, you said?
2 to 4.
Don't get there at 4 because everybody will be gone. From 2 to 4,
they hang around.
The Boat Basin Cafe. Bring your mustache.
Yes.
Very important. Everybody has to have a mustache. That's the price of
admission. And you can have your picture taken on the red carpet.
Ooh. Wow.
I bought a bath mat. Oh, I did. I bought a red bath mat.
Gizwiz.biz for more information. Thank you, Dickie D. We'll talk to you later.
Okay.
My good
Excellent.
Buddy. And, of course, don't forget his podcast, gizwiz.tv with OMG Chad Johnson. Do I have time for one more? I'd love to get one more call in here. I got a couple of minutes. Let's see if we can get Gretchen on from Costa Mesa. Hi, Gretchen.
Hi.
Welcome.
You are my last resort.
Uh-oh.
I bought a Seagate external hard drive about 5 years ago.
Okay.
I have stored all of my grandma photos of all my grandchildren on there, all my personal photos. Everything went on to the external. I did not put anything onto my hard drive in my computer, and that external has now crashed. We took it to a retail place that has restored stuff for us in the past. They were not able to do it. And then my husband found a place online. They said it might be $900 to $1,200 to do it, but they'd rebuild all the drives. And but if they couldn't do it, they wouldn't charge us. And they just told us they can't do it. Everything's gone. Have you ever heard of that before?
Oh, yeah. That's why we talk about backup ad infinitum.
I know.
Oh, God, you're breaking my heart. Okay, so there is one other company to call. They're not an advertiser. I've used them and known them for years. Drive Savers. They're in Northern California.
Okay.
They do something. Now, unfortunately, now each company that's played with this may have made it worse, not better. So it may be, in fact, it cannot be recovered at this point because of the local guy and now this other guy. They've all been messing with it. So, but call Drive Savers, give them your tale, and they, you know, the thing that they do is they have a clean room. They can disassemble it. They can take parts from identical hard drives and replace them. So if it's a hardware failure, oftentimes they can fix it. But the problem is, at this point, we don't know what you got because people have been messing with it. But look, if Drive Savers can't fix it, no one can fix it. And it may be at this point, I'm sad to say, that may be what's happened. I am so sorry, Gretchen. Back it up, folks. Back it up. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today and Tech News Tonight. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.